the committee to order. And seeing how we have a quorum, I think this is just one set of minutes from two sets of minutes. So, Representative Beard, would you care to move the minutes from April 7th?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move those minutes. I think my name is on the attendance.
Yes, it is. So all those in favor of the minutes as written, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And then we have the minutes from, what day is that from? February 9th. This was the fun hearing, the tax bioscience hearing. So, Representative Hilty, if you were one of those there, would you care to move those minutes?
I will, Mr. Chair. Adoption of minutes from February 9th.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Hilty. Any comments or concerns? Seeing none, all those in favor, say aye.
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 That piece of business is out of order. I mean, out of the way here. I hate to say that, out of order. Today, we're going to have a presentation from the Science and Technology Committee project from last year. It was one of our bills that it was known around here as the North Star Project, I think, for those who might have some other relationship to it. I sat through a couple of their hearings and their meetings during the interim. They came up with some pretty good ideas, and as you have in front of you, this booklet. I don't know who got a chance to read it. You know, we get a lot around here, but I have to say that I was very impressed and very thrilled with the process and the work product that they came out with. So with us today, we have the two co-chairs, and I'm going to allow Dan Mellon, who was the co-chair with Commissioner McElroy, ask him to come to the witness table and kind of go over the recommendations of the Science and Technology Initiative. And then if there's questions, hopefully we'll take 20 minutes to go over the report, maybe a little longer, and then open it up for some questions. And hopefully get your report and your recommendations. Mr. Mellon, if you'd identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dan Mellon. I am a managing partner of Magnet 360, a company that delivers advertising and marketing services, co-founder of the Minnesota Cup, and a serial entrepreneur. I am here today in my capacity as co-chair of the Science and Technology Economic Development Project Committee. In the 1980s, I worked for startup companies that included Apple and Microsoft. I was recruited to Minnesota to join 3M. After 10 years at 3M and its spin-off Amation, my business partner Scott Littman and I created an internet services company that we later sold to WPP. After four more years operating that company, it was ranked, company was called Imaginet. It was ranked by Ad Age and Ad Week as a top 10 internet service provider nationally. We had 13 offices in the United States, Canada, and England. When we left, we created the Minnesota Cup as an opportunity to give something back. It's a statewide competition that will begin its sixth year in March. My partner and I have completed more than 20 transactions creating, buying, and selling companies. In addition to WPP, other acquiring companies have included Amation, Comcast, and Johnson & Johnson. Most recently, we have participated in an angel investment fund, and I sit on the boards of six growth companies. With that, let me begin. Minnesota once led, but by most measures, we are losing our prominence in science and technology innovation. To quote from our report, the positive conditions that once existed for science and technology leadership are an unfettered business environment, strong venture capital funding sources, coordinated public and private support for technology industries among them are fading against the backdrop of their own legacy, unmodified for current conditions and unsupported by future vision and plan. The Science and Technology Committee, which met at the legislature's direction, is very concerned for several reasons. There is no consensus today that a crisis exists. There is no overall strategy for industry, academia, and government to help Minnesota regain its leadership position. And there is no permanent structure to create, fund, and monitor our performance in these areas. This is the fault of no individual, organization, or institution, but is the collective responsibility, it's our collective responsibility to take action now, or we will be able to, we will not be able to realize the positive economic future that's within our power to create. Not to dwell on the mechanics of the process, but to give a sense of kind of how an already busy group of mostly private business people and key public sector partners did a healthy amount of work in a short period of time. Significant amounts of data collection, analysis, and writing were completed by the members of our committee. We used the DEED staff to help with some data sourcing and report preparation, but clearly this report is the collective product of a very strong group of individuals, some of whom are here today. We will spend most of our time today on the conclusions and recommendations from our report. I do encourage you read it. You know, I know you get a lot, but there's quite a lot in there. Those committee members who are here are welcome to add their perspectives and most likely answer questions as time permits. The legislature asked us to design, coordinate, and administer a science and technology program to maximize economic growth, promote welfare of the people, and to create and retain jobs in our industrial base for the state of Minnesota. Quite a tall order, to say the least. With our recommendations today, we are not all the way to the full implementation of a science and technology program, but we can see a clear path on how to get there. In all the areas you asked us to examine, we found aspects of deep concern for our future, and we need to act today to make the necessary investments and changes in each one of these sectors, which I will cover in a moment. First, let me give you a background of who's represented by the committee. It's on the executive summary list that you receive on the back page or in pages 22 and 20 through 24 in the full report. Dan McElroy, as deed commissioner, by statute was to lead the effort, and he asked me to serve as his co-chair. Participating in the committee are investment professionals, private businesses, trade groups, higher education, and state government. As a group, we wanted to add a union representative, and with the help of the AFL-CIO, to get some assistance in organized labor who is directly involved in the workforce programs. The committee met four times from October through January in public meetings. We had many followers or attendees at each of those meetings. And as time permitted, we engaged our guests in the discussion to ensure that we had a free flow of ideas. Sections of the report were drafted by subteams and circulated to the entire group before each meeting. We drew upon our own experience and data sources, many of which are included in the final report. The committee developed a list of strengths and weaknesses in each of the areas you asked us to consider, and we developed a vision and mission. By looking at national studies, we could measure Minnesota's science and technology performance against other states and regions to see how other states have invested in science and technology and identify possible governance and investment models. Investment in science and technology impacts everyone, whether it's in manufacturing, agriculture, or support services. It's the engine for economic, robust economic growth, but Minnesota is lagging, and it's a decline that has really snuck up on us. For instance, compared to the surrounding states, we look pretty good by most, if not all, measures, and some of which is on page 28 of the report. It should be obvious, of course, that our competitors aren't only the Midwestern neighbors, but heavyweight competition from other parts of the United States and certainly the world. Even in a Midwestern comparative data, however, it masks some deeper problems, such as the number and value of venture capital investments. Our apparent success is due to large, later-stage venture capital funding into medical technology that is one of our legacy strengths. It is, if this data showed true angel capital, our metrics would be much worse. And through the Minnesota Cup, we hear constantly from entrepreneurs about the lack of angel funding sources. Let's get right down into the data of other states. It will be notable how much Minnesota lags behind. The results of science and technology investment are truly astounding, and they are not self-proclaimed returns by the states. Ohio, for example, with its third frontier initiative, has sought analysis from respected groups such as SRI International in documenting their returns. The returns in other states are sobering. Many of them don't start out with the advantages as strong as Minnesota's legacies. But we will demonstrate today Minnesota is far behind other states and is starting to show, it's starting to show up in the standard metrics of economic performance. It's important to understand all of these results are based on having a long-term strategy and a continued commitment to investment. The John Adams Innovation Institute in Massachusetts looked at the 10 states, including Massachusetts, that they see themselves competing with: Minnesota, California, Connecticut, Illinois, New Jersey, North Carolina, New York, Pennsylvania, and Virginia. It is true that some of these states are larger, but if they see Minnesota as the competition and we and are benchmarking themselves against us, we better take note. And on many measures, we are clearly behind them. Science and engineering graduates, engineering degrees per capita, industry R&D and at universities, and federal R&D per capita. In the Milken Institute report, Minnesota's rank in technology concentration and dynamism also fell from 11th in 2004 to 19th in 2008. This is a cause for serious concern. If we look at the Twin Cities region, in many ways the economic engine of the state and the upper Midwest, we find similar cause for alarm. The Milken Institute in Philadelphia examined life sciences clusters and performance among its prime competitors, Boston, Chicago, Los Angeles, Minneapolis-St. Paul, New York, Raleigh-Durham, San Diego, San Francisco, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. The Twin Cities regions ranked against our competitor metros fares badly. In life sciences graduates at all levels, innovation pipeline in life sciences, risk capital, and human capital. It is only on medical technology, in the medical technology sector that we stand out, but most of that growth in the sector and the convergence of med tech with pharmaceuticals is all happening elsewhere. It's true Minnesota does well on household income and per capita income, even against our direct competitors. But a legacy of Fortune 500 headquarters, Forbes 100 firms, and medical device strengths, while incredibly good for Minnesota, will alone not propel us into the future. Minnesota does great on livability standards, best places to live, family happiness, but some erosion is starting to show. For example, the New Economy Index, knowledge-dependent, tech-based economy, as a state we have dropped, and if that continues, as Minnesota can't sustain the high standard of living as in the past. It is a leading indicator of future outcomes and should deeply concern us all. We rank low on R&D dollars from federal government and non-industry resources. We have no real plan to incentivize R&D business investment with policies and programs through the means other states use, such as matching funds. And later you will see that we make recommendations to expand the R&D tax credits to help overcome this. Our SBIR, or Small Business Innovation Research funding, in 2008 ranked us 22nd, and we have been in the 20s among states for the past decade. We have more than our share of patents for technology, but do a poor job of building companies around them. It is well known that we have a dearth of early stage capital. Even while we do have later stage funding in more established sectors, we need support for entrepreneurs to improve our our new business formation metrics, which are ranked at the bottom of these states. You know, 40 years ago, Minnesota was a home, was the home for mainframe computers. Really, we were the original Silicon Valley. It was here. We still have some remnants of that industry, but the explosive growth in computers and technology went elsewhere. In fact, the high-tech manufacturing that remains is really due to circumstances that were in place back then. The continued source of the brain power and resources that continue to make them successful. A sign of our erosion is the number of technology jobs, which is down 11% since 2001. But what are we doing to retain the growth of what we have, or to attract the next generation of high-tech companies? Medtronic recently expanded to Texas. Sermonix has expanded to Alabama. Minnesota has no incentive funding to speak of that we can use the assets that we have, the existing base, much less resources to attract new companies and people. High business tax rates and few public incentives will make it hard for Minnesota to restore itself to the top of science and technology states. Minnesota does recognize the value of STEM, but there is no coordinated plan to connect those programs to businesses and to adapt to the changing needs of those businesses. We are slipping in important areas like graduate degrees in science and engineering. Another manifestation of the future problem is we have not attracted new technology workers through immigration as well as other states. So what is the Science and Technology Economic Development Committee propose to do about this? First of all, we need a permanent structure to plan and develop strategy that will ensure that it gets funded. We will provide more detail on this in the next slide. But in this session, the legislature can pass tax incentives. Angel investment tax credit is the top of the list. More than 20 states have it, and Minnesota is suffering without it. We must expand the R&D tax credit beyond C corporations and make it a refundable credit. And lastly, we must create an investment program for insurance companies to invest in venture capital known nationally as CAPCO. On the need for the angel tax credits, the only comprehensive data that's available is for later stage capital investments. Minnesota does indeed do better in this realm, but is not primarily where we have a problem. We have more established firms that can capture those venture funds and investors willing to provide them. Our ability to furnish early stage angel funds is hampered by a lack of this tax credit. How do we know? Ideas and businesses that are born in Minnesota are going to where those funds are in places like Wisconsin. No one has good information of the volume of angel funds in any state, but we can see it from the deals that we're losing. The legislature can also provide funding so that Minnesota can attract science and technologies companies and keep expansions of our existing firms in the state. We have no significant tools statewide to offer these companies. As for the Minnesota Science and Technology Initiative, is responsible for a development of a plan and allocation of funds. There are two key parts to it. A private sector commission appointed to oversee broad policy and monitor progress, and an advisory board like the current Science and Technology Committee that produced its report. We request $500,000 to hire staff and consultants to prepare the full model, and we ask that the legislature authorize the current committee to continue and formally add a labor representative and include the Biobusiness Alliance. A number of specific programmatic proposals that could come from a science and technology initiative could include provide research innovation grants, create centers of excellence and innovation and encourage research parks, provide funding for capital improvements to commercialize these business opportunities, and to invest in science and technology and workforce programs, And finally, create and coordinate new science and technology business recruitment efforts. This list is far from exhaustive, and until we have developed the full model, we won't have related budget recommendations. Our goal would be to have a full proposal for the next legislative session, but we can't stand still while other states are investing $1 billion plus in areas where Minnesota could be competitive. To reiterate my opening observation, in Minnesota, the science and technology sector, there must be a consensus that there is a crisis. Minnesota must have a plan and a strategy, and to do this requires a permanent funded structure to guide the effort. Most of the gaps and inaction occurred during the lifetimes of the people in this room. Had we acted together earlier, we might be in a different place today. And if we don't act today, what will we say to our children's generation 25 years from now? We knew that Minnesota had a science and technology problem, and we knew there was a solution, but we chose to do nothing and rely on the legacy of our investments. Thank you for your attention, and I encourage questions and discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Mellon. And I want the members to know that I'm strongly encouraging them to kind of plow through this report. It took me about 30 minutes to read and about 30 minutes to go over the charts. And then I had to, I had to digest it. So it's not a difficult, in the scope of the reports that we get, it's not a very difficult one. It's got big print and lots of spaces between the lines. Thank you, Mr. Mellon. If I could ask, are there, you alluded to other members from the committee. If you care to, would you care to introduce them?
Certainly. Tim Mulcahy from University of Minnesota. Mark Willers, Rural Energy Committee. And the commissioner himself.
Thank you. And I think Gail O'Kane made it to those committee.
Gail O'Kane, yes. Yeah. Thank you.
She just kind of snuck in and went to the back of the room. I don't know. It must be like a teacher's or classroom kind of issue for her.
Right.
Well, I'm going to open it up for questions.
Please.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mellon, you mentioned that we used to be the Silicon Valley, so to speak. Silicon. And 20 years ago, which would push us about 1980 or so, that we started losing our status. What was the environment from a legislative standpoint, if you made any indication? What was it at that point or before that made us so technology literate in that realm? If you can reflect back, or if you've made any type of assumptions in your report, not maybe necessary here, but as you were meeting together.
Right, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, I don't even know what the legislature was doing 20 years ago in the state. it wasn't relevant to me at that time. What I do see having happened was we had something, a spark, a creation, concepts that all were created here, and what we didn't do is figure out how to carry them forward through a program or any initiative. So I don't know that there was a fundamental change in law that got us there, but there wasn't any support mechanisms haven't been support mechanisms from the government that have created or nurtured those types of opportunities.
And Representative Anderson, one of the issues that happened at that time is there was the decision to go from PCs or mainframes, and Control Data and some of the big companies here chose mainframes because they just made that choice, and other people, I guess, chose right. And the mainframes kind of died off. We still have a fairly substantial mainframe group here, but not the PCs.
Chair Mahoney and Representative Anderson, I would just add to that
Could you identify yourself?
Yes, I'm Tim Mulcahy. I'm the Vice President for Research at the University of Minnesota, and I was a member of the committee that drafted the report. One of the things that we do know, although I, like Dan, am not familiar with the legislative culture and history in Minnesota 20 years ago, one of the things that is evident is that states like California and Massachusetts at that time, 20 to 30 years ago, initiated the kind of science and technology program that we're advocating for in Minnesota today. And it was through the creation of a favorable public policy arena, investment opportunities, that they were able to attract some of these industries, the Silicon Valley, to California, the pharmaceuticals and medical devices outside of Minnesota to the East Coast. And so I think it was less of what was happening in Minnesota. It was what wasn't really here, but what the other states saw as an important opportunity. And if you look at their success now, the return on their investment has been phenomenal. And what we're trying to say here is it's time for Minnesota to take the same opportunity right now before it's too late and create an environment that'll encourage more to come in, but also prevent what we still have from finding more lucrative opportunities outside of the state.
Gotwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to our testifiers, and Mr. Mellon, thanks for the presentation. This is one of the more important things that I've seen come forward in my time on this committee. I'm curious, the state certainly has a role to play, and you've laid out some specifics here that could be turned into public policy, but obviously this is going to take more than state government. This is going to take coordination with industry, with investors, with entrepreneurs, and so forth. What entity, your group is doing the smart thinking on this sort of thing, but is it DEED? Is it a private-public partnership? There has to be somebody coordinating this and making sure that this happens, because time and again you see these kinds of reports and they end up on a shelf or they're only partially implemented. Is there an entity, or do you envision an entity whose responsibility it will be to make this happen?
I'm sorry, Representative, I can't read your name. Gutlop, sorry. Representative Gutlop. That's a question that came up and the committee wrestled with as we looked at the programs in roughly 25 to 30 states across the union. There are multiple variety of approaches, but the most common one was a public-private group. There were some that excluded government directly involved in the management and oversight other than the appropriation and accountability to the legislature. Others actually involved state leadership at the governance level committees. What we're proposing here, as Dan alluded to, is a dual governance structure where there'll be two committees, a committee that's really responsible for the major fiduciary responsibility. That would include, could include, representatives appointed by both houses of the legislature, the governor's office, and at-large members. Those, we believe, in order for this to be successful, those really have to be heavy hitters in the community, people with great credibility and great vision and great passion for the state. We also believe that what you fundamentally need is a group, an advisory group, which really is responsible for assessing the strengths and weaknesses across the state, assessing opportunities, identifying specific programmatic elements that would be Minnesota-specific in terms of their advantages, and then to advise, for example, what kind of programs to structure. And that group would also then be responsible for helping develop a set of metrics that they would then use to evaluate the progress and report back to the governing board, and they could then make adjustments in the program going forward. But it has to be a partnership involving the government, the public, and the private communities in order for this to succeed.
The prerogative of the chair is to ask a quick question here. From any of the three of you, Mr. Mulcahy, Willer?
Yeah, Mark Willer.
Or Mellon, do you envision this as, I get accused of only focusing on bioscience. I think your purview was wider. Just relatively quickly, the areas that you think that this could fit into, whether they're bioscience or ag or energy or pharma or whatever. I mean, I'll let you fill the committee.
Do you want to take a crack? Mark?
Okay. Chairman Mahoney, my name is Mark Willers. I'm the CEO of Minwind Energy. I was asked to be on this committee because I'm the chairman of the Minnesota Renewable Committee. That came out of the stimulus money that came into Minnesota for how we connect the private sector with jobs and education. We had several million dollars, and it was put into the 35 states that the federal government said had the most renewable energy possibilities in Minnesota. That's where I sit from coming to this. Where I see this here is a little bit different than, not different, but a wider expanse, as you just said. The issues that I see, and I'm not in medical devices, but we own and operate wind turbines in Minnesota. Presently, I buy no parts and no manufacturing out of the state. Okay, so what, from a checkbook standpoint, since I'm the guy that signs the checks, we have hired engineers here in Minnesota now to look at more efficient hydraulic equipment. We have technology and education that, because what's happening is you are all ratepayers. you pay so much for electricity. I'm having to buy parts because of currency exchange 30 to 40% higher because that's where it's manufactured. That's where I see we need a connection between where we can work together with the private sector. Our board of Minrim is private-led. We see a very huge opportunity here to be able to work with the higher ed institutions, both the U and Minsku, and how we can put these together. We also look in our ethanol world. I sit on the board for that. We don't buy many parts for that. And in my family, farming operation has been here for about 115 years now. We buy zero inputs in the state from anything in the ag sector, and yet Land O'Lakes is the largest producer of animal feed in the world by almost 300%. We have Cargill here from grain marketing. So how do we connect these dots and try and create everybody's going to want to own the technology. We all understand that, but somehow there's a gap missing between when we work with the higher ed and those of you on this committee to understand what we're trying to do and what's happening on the economic side. Right now we are putting together three more public offerings and we're doing everything. I think there's even a miss on the tax credits on how you get larger amounts of capital involved in Minnesota to create ownership. I think that's one part that's missing here yet that we really haven't talked about. We're talking about the credits, but we're just not talking about the value of the ownership because we're getting our equity and debt out of the East Coast and in Europe.
Representative Mahoney, if I could just add one comment here, is that Minnesota actually is blessed with a lot of great opportunities across multiple sectors. And another important thing to understand is that many of those sectors would all benefit from some common foundation in public policy, public and in terms of technical resources and capabilities in the state. So what we really are trying to discuss here is the creation of what I've always referred to as an economic ecosystem, which has all the parts in place. You mentioned biosciences. I think the BioBusiness Alliance has done a very good job of really doing the kind of due diligence in that domain that I think we need to do in other sectors of the state. Develop what the strengths and weaknesses and opportunities are in those sectors. Develop what they need uniquely and what they need that overlaps with other sectors. And all of that input should be brought together to this advisory group and whoever else they would consult with. And they should be charged with saying, synthesize this valuable information and say to us, this is where our best opportunities lie, and this is where the least investment will get the biggest impact. So by far, this has to be a statewide, multi-sector-centered approach, and that's why we refer to it as a science and technology initiative and not a bioscience initiative or an ag initiative or an IT initiative. We really think that all of the sectors in the state would benefit from this kind of comprehensive program development.
Representative Cotwell, you had a follow-up, but yes. There's six other people after you, so.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just as a follow-up to my previous question, where are we in the synthesis of this private-public partnership that would connect the dots or create a conduit for technological advancement?
We're about $500,000 short.
It's a very, Representative Gutwald, it's a very interesting question, and if I could just take a minute to say the etiology of how many of us got here, I think is an important reflection. Many of us were representing our own, I don't want to say parochial, because I don't think any of us were thinking only of ourselves, but each of our areas were thinking of what it is we were going to come to the legislature looking for last year to help us do our part of the big picture. But what wasn't happening is we weren't communicating very effectively with each other, and we very soon realized that sometimes we were asking for contradictory things, sometimes we were confusing the legislature because they're hearing different stories from different sectors. And so last session, several of us, and by us I mean sectors and trade groups and businesses and the higher ed groups, said, okay, we're going to step back from our individual approach here and try to come together around a common plan. So I think we are well on our way. I think the legislative action that you took last year to basically empanel this committee was a step in the right direction. And what we're suggesting is now, if we do this as it's envisioned, we need to expand the scope of participation and input. But I think in my few years in trying to do this, I recognize more now, more passion, more interest in locking arms and coming forward together in the interest of Minnesota than I've seen before.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm still synthesizing what you've just said because it kind of ties into where my thought process was going here. I think the broad picture is great, that we've broadened what we're looking at rather than the silos. And I guess that's kind of what I was getting at. It seems to me in times of always, I guess, not just in times of economic hardship, but when we have limited resources and we have to focus what we're doing, it seems as though we've had this disjointed silo approach. And the Biobusiness Alliance has been a wonderful asset to this community, but then I hear too narrow. Looking at ag is too narrow. Some of our nonprofits out there, the Southern Minnesota Initiative Foundation and some of the other foundations, are doing similar work. Looking at regional assets, and it seems to me we need this higher level approach, which is kind of what I looked at the Office of Economic Development to do. So I guess to me it's, how are we going to use what limited resources we have in the best way? Does that mean undoing some of the things that we have in place in order to fund this? And I guess that would be one of the questions I would lay out for the committee, you know, with what little we have, what's the best way to spend it, and is this it? I did have a question. I also wanted to say I appreciate the look back, the history. I read this. I wish I had the copy that I marked up, because I read this several weeks ago, and I didn't bring that copy with me. I appreciate the look back, and I'm a little concerned that all we're doing, and that doesn't sound right, but all we're doing is catching up with where everyone else is, and I guess I see us, we need to jump over where everyone else is to what's beyond that. And so I hope we can be visionary beyond just playing catch-up. So that's, as I listen to you, I guess I was hoping you'd go over what other states are doing. Let's just not play catch up, but let's be innovative and creative and get ahead of them. But the question I had specific to my parochial view is representing Rochester, and I noticed Mayo Clinic is on there, and they should be with their science background. But IBM is missing. And from our part of the state, IBM is a large technology, and this did say science and technology investment. And so I guess I wondered why IBM wasn't at the table, given all their work on bioinformatics with the University of Minnesota Rochester, the Blue Gene computer, which I know is being used at Hormel, and I guess that would just be a question from my parochial little window.
Representative Norton, I think we're going to get a new I would just make a couple quick comments to your earlier statements. My suggestion here was not that what's been accomplished in the biosciences is irrelevant and we should back away from. What I'm saying is that actually exemplifies what's needed in other sectors as well. And if you read the BioBusiness Report, what they identify is whether you're in ag or whether you are in technology or whether you're in biodevices, there's a core set of technologies, workforce needs that would benefit everyone. So an immediate response, if you're saying, what can we do now with what we have available, find those common things and get them established, and they will benefit the work that's already been done and will be a foundation for the work that we will do in the years to come. The other thing I would point out is that the reason we're here and advocating more time, why don't we have a plan for you right now? Because in the 3 months or 4 months we had since the legislation, we could not get to all of the IBMs and the Cargills and the other companies across the state so that they would feel that they were also represented in this effort. I mean, if we came forward and said we're representing the group that's here and no one else, I think it would be a problem for us as well as you. So we want to expand participation. We want to connect the silos. And I just think in some sectors, bioscience is the best example. The groundwork has been done more thoroughly, and they're more ready for investment, whereas other areas need similar work.
Mr. Mallon, did someone whisper something in your ear?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Norton, we had the Minnesota High Tech Association as a participant, and which is a mechanism to get some of the input from that broader sector, inclusive of IBM and Rochester. And IBM in Rochester is a great example of the Silicon Valley still being here at some level. I mean, it's a huge part of that legacy that still carries forward, and we need to capture that.
Representative Barnard, did you have a question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. It actually goes along the lines of the reflections that have occurred up to this point, but I'll start by saying I in no manner want to present myself as opposed to your proposal. I'm very open to it. And I understand the role of government in bringing sectors together in a unique way. However, we're in a time where we're thoughtfully being challenged about every existing entity that we are involved in and whether we ought to be involved in that. What is the proper role of government, and should government be smaller? And so when you bring to bear the creating another entity, you're raising that whole issue, that whole section of issues about the proper role of government, particularly in the private sector, and incentivizing investment. And that's a very complex question. And other members have mentioned other entities, you know, the BioBusiness Alliance. You've already given a great deal of credit for the work that they've done, and we've certainly been working with them. I think government has tended to put its research and development efforts toward universities. Education has been the focus of that investment, and we continue to do that, and there's entities there that do a lot of that work. And in my own area, Minnesota State University Mankato has a very strong public-private sector partnership initiatives where we're actively engaging the business community. And Representative Norton mentioned the initiative funds, the kind of work they're doing. But specifically, what's come out of the work of the initiative funds is the Southern Minnesota Competitiveness Project, which is primarily, that's private-public partnership, but it's private sector investment that and it's moving forward a great deal of science and technology investment in the process of its partnerships. So I'm just laying that out there, and then I'm trying to understand, and I need to read this, and I will, but I think we have to be careful. You're asking for urgency, and I'm saying we're being cautioned by any overreach about the role of government. So that's the challenge to you, is you really have to really make more than an average case for creating another governmental entity in this time.
Representative Mahoney, may I have a comment, a response?
Sure.
I don't disagree with your assessment at all, and I think all of us recognize the challenge that the legislature and the government play, particularly in this day and age. Those of us who've been studying this kind of an issue for a number of years recognize the value that, you know, foresight 10, 20 years ago would have had for us at this point in time. But if you look at many of the economists, several of whom have come and testified before this committee and others, because I've been there when they've done it, they've basically all advised that at a time of economic downturn, economic hardship, is the prime time to invest in innovation and research. And those other states have done it. So I'm not trying to downplay the critical and difficult choices the legislature has to make. But the point here is we won't be around to even catch up a few years from now, let alone leap ahead, if in fact we don't plan now. Because if you look at the returns on these various plans from across the country, 5, 10, 20 years is where you really see the big return. And I think this is a solution not just to this challenge for the state of Minnesota, but if you look at what other states have been able to do with the revenues that they've been able to recognize through the vitality of their economic development in this area, it allows them to address the other human issues, the human health issues, the welfare issues, all of the elder care, medical issues. They have more resources available to creative people like yourself because they put programs like this in place. And what we're saying is Minnesota can no longer delay. They can no longer sit back and say times are tough. We're going to use the seed corn some other way if, in fact, the next set of legislatures are going to be able to have resources to address the kind of problems you're struggling with today.
Mr. Mallard or Mr. Willers, did you have any comments on to that?
Chairman Mahoney, I'd just like a quick response. I understand exactly where the budget cutting side is because of where we stand in our business and what we're doing for spending capital. I think you're going to, having the Southeast group, we work very closely with the Southwest Initiative and insisting on small businesses and being some guidance for them on some of their loan programs. I think that somehow we're going to have to come up with a connection where we work closer together and connect these dots. Because what I see happening is, it doesn't matter if it's in the Southeast group, there's things over to Minsky that they have, or there's pieces up in the north that the pieces that you can assist with. Somehow I still see there's a disconnect. And I know everybody's saying they're working together, but I'll be the pain here today and say that we could make that a little bit better. And I think there's some business people that would like to have access to some of the other educational institution information. And I realize that it does not come easy. But if you, as a committee, end up coming out with an edict of saying thou shall, I guess that's what you end up doing. But sometimes when times are tough, we buckle down and we need to do things that we need to do.
Chairman, Representative Brainerd, it's to reiterate a little bit, and it's very important in both a down economy, but also as we continue to grow and go out of a down economy, to invest in this space. And the type of investment that we are looking for in tax credits and other things provide a long-term structure for growth and new business development, and the ROIs that we show, that return that are laid out in the many different cases inside the report, clearly demonstrate that the net of it at the end of time is a positive for all the states that participate in it. And so in these hard times, we have to make tough decisions. That is understood. But this is one of those decisions that to not do is also shooting yourself in the foot.
Thank you. Representative Mack, did you have a question?
I did. Just two brief questions, Chair. The first one, and I'll just ask them both and then respond to in whatever order makes sense. The first one is, on the other states' S&T results, some pretty stunning numbers on the return on investments. Wondering kind of if you have some examples or snippets of what that might look like, particularly, you know, North Carolina. How long ago was that $1 billion investment made that resulted in a $45 billion return? Was it one main investment in one area? Was it spread out over several different areas? And then the other question is, you referenced STEM here in the state and the potential that that has, and obviously we're looking at ways to invest and build on resources that the state has, but then also investing in the people that hopefully are going to come up with the ideas of the future, that being young people, and investing in our education system. So I'm wondering if you've seen good examples in other states or have ideas, maybe it's in the report, I still need to read through it, but ideas on how to better connect STEM and business creators and business investors and tying those together better, that they might, you know, be coupled as they go into the future. I was just wondering if you have any good examples or ideas on how that works and what it looks like.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
Karen Mahoney, representative of the committee, and Representative Mack. My name is Gail O'Kane. I work for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and as was earlier noted, I was a member of the committee. I think that there are just countless examples in other states of how they've used the STEM investments within their innovation programs, both at the K-12 level and at the higher education level. And I think what's notable in some instances is just the scale of investments. So, for example, in Ohio, where they've invested $1 billion in their overall innovation fund, $250 million of that. Now, I don't know how that's changed over time, but the initial allocation was that $250 million of that would go to internships for students. The scale of $250 million for internships is just staggering. I don't think that any, you know, if you added all the higher education investments that we have into internships, it would even approach, you know, a tenth of that, because we just don't have those resources. So sometimes it's creating incentives to spur businesses to get into the game. So it's hard for businesses right now to pay for internships. We're trying to, within the Minsky system, find companies to step up and take interns, but really they barely have enough money for their own employees. So I think a lot of times it's a public-private partnership in the STEM area as well that's being advocated. There are places in there are investments in North Carolina in mobile lab programs that are going out to high schools and grades below high schools to get students interested, so engagement programs. There's any number of models. I think that with innovation funds in the STEM area, we can look and see what some of the best practices are in other states and try to replicate those as well. We do have some of those things on a small scale. So, for example, we have a mobile lab program ourselves at St. Cloud State University, but we don't have the state funding that many other states have dedicated to programs like that. So I think there's a lot of innovation to kind of build on that we have already. Those are just some examples.
And
to your first question.
Representative Mack, if I might, I've got a ton of information on the ROI and the initial investment, say, whether it's Oklahoma or Ohio or Pennsylvania, and I'll provide it to yourself and any of the other committee members, because session starts at noon. I wanted to get to Representative Winkler's question and then move on to the accountability. So, Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a brief statement leading to a question and a challenge, I guess. Your mentioning of the mainframe computer industry, it seems to me, actually is an indicator that maybe we should do nothing, because the state of Minnesota lost the mainframe computer industry. That industry, well, we didn't lose it. It just disappeared. It shrank dramatically, and yet it didn't dramatically undercut Minnesota's unemployment or employment rates, its personal income, its state domestic product. In fact, Minnesota handled that quite well because we were a churning, innovative, dynamic economy. I think that is further reinforced when you look at Fortune 500 companies in Minnesota over the last several decades. The number has tended to vary between 15 and 20 Fortune 500 headquarters in the state of Minnesota. The individual companies have changed significantly, and I think that is why we should have caution about the state taking a role in predicting what industries will be successful. I don't think 20 years ago we would have put a lot of money into Target or Best Buy, and yet not only do they have their headquarters that churn a lot or create a lot of spill off companies that help feed that. So we have to be careful. In the issue of tax credits, I think it's important to distinguish a state government from the federal government. We can't borrow money in order to do this. We have to cut services, cut spending, or raise taxes on someone else to do it. So that inherently means that we are playing a role in market interference somehow by doing this. It could be that we pay for these by reducing other credits in other areas. What this leads to me, and I like very much your use of an ecosystem. I think of an economy as more like a coral reef, and you need to have lots of plankton and algae at the bottom in order to feed the shrimp, feed the larger creatures all the way up to the sharks at the top, and that the health at the bottom through new company formation, through innovation, is really what is going to feed growth further up the line. And that's why I think this information about venture capital and angel investment is so important, because what we're talking about is not picking an industry, not picking a sector, or deciding that we're going to be good at this or we're going to be good at that. It's about making sure that the overall economy is healthy at the bottom so that we're not dying out. But that, to me, leads to a distinction. We know we have information about venture capital. We don't have a lot of information about angel investor credits or about the angel investment sector. We have experience, people who work in that area. I work in that area. We have instinct, but we don't have a lot of hard evidence. And I think it's very important. And I think this is where more research, more information needs to be done on really not only how much money are we bringing in those areas, but whether that is going to the right areas, whether that is feeding a larger hole in a positive way. And I think before we can declare a crisis, we need to better understand what's really going on in those areas, because there is kind of a question mark. And so before we engage in this effort of creating a new institution, investing in tax credits, I think more evidence needs to be brought to the table to support that. My instinct says it's correct, but we can't go in this direction without sacrificing something else. And so we need to know that. I think that's the charge due.
Representative Mahoney, may I offer a comment? Representative Winkler, I'd like to pick up on a couple of things. First of all, I hope your mother was one who taught you to go with your instincts. Having said that, let me just return your comment about so what, we lost the Silicon Valley, we're still doing just swell, really concerns me in the sense that it suggests that we don't need to do anything and we're going to succeed. I would use a sports analogy and say, would you put up the 1950 Minnesota Vikings against the 2010 Minnesota Vikings? The rules have changed. The rules have changed. The players have changed. The speed of the game has changed. And what happened in Minnesota when that happened, you're right, when the industry, the computer industry left, we had the birth all of a sudden of the medical device industry. But that was all happening in an environment where 50 other states in the union weren't trying to compete to pull that business out of Minnesota as they are now. So if we continue to say, because it didn't happen 20 years ago, it's not going to happen today, then we're done right now, and we could really draw this to a quick close. I don't think that's true. I don't think you want that. And the other thing I would say is, I don't think you heard any of us proposing that angel tax credits would not be part of a comprehensive program. What we're talking about is a comprehensive program, but we've been asked by the legislators, many of you, to tell us something we can do quickly that is in the direction of the big gain, but we can do it quickly. Angel tax credits is one, but if you don't have angel tax credits and the size of that linked in with a more comprehensive global plan, you're going to repeat what we've been doing all along, and that is one-off, isolated, individual transactions that do not leverage the potential that would be realized if it was integrated into a comprehensive plan. So what we're advocating is, let's build the shoal, the reef that you're talking about, as opposed to just throwing some shrimp in the water and hope that something comes out of it.
And Mr. McKay, I'm going to cut you off there and allow the other members, the other witnesses, if they have some closing remarks and short remarks, because I want to leave at least 15 minutes for the accountability. So Mr. Moore.
Appreciate Alan? That, Mr. Chairman. I just one quick comment about the plankton model. And really, we have an issue that we don't have enough plankton feeding our whole ecosystem. There's, and inside of that, that is where these quick hit tax credits can help an awful lot. We also don't have a lot of evidence, but we do have clear evidence of companies that are moving across the border, even if they don't even move. I had a Minnesota Cup semifinalist. All the employees live in Minnesota. They moved the headquarters into Hudson solely for tax purposes. Very rarely do they even go there. They work from Minnesota. Earlier this week, a biologist from the University of Minnesota announced her intentions of moving a startup entity towards those tax credits. So it's real, and we can pull something over our eyes and say it's not happening, or really jump on it and do something to feed us all. So.
Did you have some closing remarks, Ms. O'Kane?
The one thing I would say to the committee is we did quite a bit of research in a relatively short span of time. I was on a subgroup that was asked to look at all the different states. We divided it alphabetically. You do A through H, you know, someone else does another set. And it was really hard to find states that we would consider competitors that didn't have an initiative. I will cite Alabama as the only one that I could find in my set. And they had commissioned a report from one of these big national research firms to figure out what their plan should be. So I would say to the comments that, you know, it looks like we're adding another layer of government. What we're advocating is a public-private partnership. So hopefully that would look somewhat differently. But really it's the absence of what's here that was notable, I think, in our research, and just wanted to mention that to the committee. And I think with another year, which is what we're asking for with the creation of a committee, I think we could find a lot more depth of analysis of what's going on in the other states. All of that state-by-state research is available to you. There was so much of it, we did not include it in the report, but there's a 28-page legal size spreadsheet that we could provide to any of you that would like it, that has details on what are the programs in each state, what is the ROI, what is the governance structure, et cetera.
And if you provide that to the committee, to my assistant, we'll get that out to the members. Thank you so very, very much.
Thank you.
Did you have another question, Mr. Winkler?
I didn't have a question, Mr. Chair, but...
you can respond as we get the deed up here for...
Right. The only thing I would say is that what we need to be convinced of is that the market is not continuing to work in Minnesota like the market has worked for the past 50 years.
Mr. Loftus, good to have you back with us today. And I think you brought Ms. Sturm?
Serum.
And you're going to give us a brief update. I've got probably about 13 minutes left to talk about the accountability, and I think you might have to come back to address accountability one more time before long.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Mark Loftus. Deb Serum and I will go back and forth on these PowerPoint slides, but let me just kind of refresh. And Representative Norton was the primary author of this bill. Others probably were involved in the bill as well. But I wanted to recover some of the memory of the discussion that led to this bill in the first place, and came about because most of the programs that, while they have measures, there aren't any uniform standards across the programs that we administer at DEED, or through the programs that we administer through other people, or partners, or organizations that had received those funds. So to try to come up with similar outcomes across similar types of programs is one of the first points. And because of that absence of information, it's very hard to have good data-driven decisions about what to fund, what to cut, what to support, what to increase. So that in that environment, it's very hard to come up with good recommendations for you, or for you to make good judgments about that. And we also want to make the point that Deb will go into this in more depth, that it's important to recognize that there's a context for all of these programs. It'll probably never be possible to compare our, just to use an extreme example, our brownfield cleanup program, to compare that to services for people with disabilities. And be very different outcomes and nature of activity. But at the same time, we think that within similar types of programs, it is possible, and I'll give you an example at the end here, of how that might work. And we can do a lot better job, and as we'll define, we've kind of defined it as the buckets of programs, putting programs in the same bucket and then using those to better measures to compare them one against another. So with that, Mr. Chairman, let me say your name for the...
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mark. I'm Deb Serum. I work for DEED. Thank you, Chairman and Committee, for giving us this opportunity to share what we've been doing here. And I will be, this will be a brief discussion, so I think you'll get to your timing and have time for questions. But I guess we felt it was important to share with you a little bit about the development process here and how we got to where we got to with our proposal. First of all, we had to go through an inventory, all the programs that we have, and I think the new piece here of adding in all the pass-throughs, we had to uncover all of that and understand what all the programs were and all the pass-throughs, as well as all of the partners that we work with. In addition to then inventorying, so we knew what programs we were talking about, we also then researched the mandates, the mission, and their stated purpose. Sometimes those didn't exist, sometimes they didn't match, but we felt it was important to at least understand what they were. Then probably where the real work started was convening all of the work groups. We brought together people from DEED. We engaged our partners. We had conversations with the pass-throughs. We worked with DEED. There's a DEED staff assigned to every pass-through. We worked through them to talk with all the pass-throughs to make sure that everybody was engaged in this process. And I think we felt very strongly that we wanted to produce a product that met your needs, that helped you answer the tough questions that you have to answer, but that also was useful for DEED leadership, from our frontline managers out in the field to, you know, high-level DEED decision makers, that they would have the data that they needed to make data-driven decisions. We also felt that it was important to operate on a, we're going to do this together, we're not doing this to you. So it was very important for us to engage all of the players in the conversations. And I think we also kind of looked at it, well, this isn't being done to us either. We're part of what's being done here. So we wanted to make sure that we had that sort of positive outlook and knew that we could find a way to make this be useful. And help us, it really could help us drive for better information and better data around our programs. And believe it or not, it actually was even a way to generate some enthusiasm and some excitement around some of the programs. So that was kind of fun to see. The next big task then that we had to do was, as Mark alluded to, there's just absolutely no way you could compare all of DEED's programs one to the other. There just is such a diverse mix of programs that we operate. You just really can't put them side by side and have them be meaningful or useful to anybody. So what we created were program buckets, as we called them, a very technical term. And the buckets were around the purpose of the program. And listed on the spreadsheet in front of you were the purposes that we identified, and I won't read them to you, but obviously the adult ones were about jobs and having skills for jobs, and businesses were around, or the business and community buckets were around business attraction and job growth and those kinds of things. That's sort of our grouping. That was sort of our starting point for actually putting measures together. We were able to put all programs into a bucket. Some of them really fit in multiple buckets, so we kind of had to choose which one fit the best, but we did categorize all of them. The next piece then was to delve into the context. And in some of our learnings on this, we're admonished to never put out data naked. And I think we took that to heart and felt that it was really important to understand what we were doing and who we were doing it to or who was being served. So the context really speaks about the kind of information you have to have around the actual performance measures to be able to understand those measures and make some accurate decisions from them. And the context then is around the customer characteristics, that the a person's demographics, their educational level, their various different barriers to employment, for instance, are important things to understand around the customers of a various program. If it was a business or a community, it's also important to know the size, the location, and the industries that we're talking about. And then with the service level, it was also important to know that there are varying levels of service. The programs that serve individuals, businesses, or communities, there are examples of pretty much self-service kinds of services where we have information available, we do publications, but we really don't necessarily interact a whole lot with the people who are getting the service. Up through a case-managed kind of approach where they have a consultant or a counselor that they work with over time and there's a fair amount of follow-up, up through much more significant financial investments, either in training or, community development or whatever. And you'd expect very different results from those different levels of service. So those are the context things that we felt were important to include in here. And then moving on, this is really the framework of the measures that we've proposed. And at a very high level, across all the programs, we want to be able to answer these questions. So what is the program's purpose? And that we mentioned earlier talks about the statute, the mandate, the mission. So you've got that there for background, for reference. And then what are the program's resources? How much money is appropriated? And how much of that money is spent on admin? The next would be who does the program serve? So that will be, certainly how many people are served, people or businesses or whatever it is that is being served. But then also, what is that other information you need to know about that customer? What is it that distinguishes this program from another program? And then next is, what does the program do? Is it that self-service kind of, we produce publications in this program, or we invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in some sort of other development, and then ultimately to get to, so what are the results? What are some of the short-term indicators of what this program has produced, delivered, whatever, and then working towards some longer-term outcomes. And what our hope is to provide you this information within each of the buckets. As you get to the buckets, these get to be more specific questions, but to give the decision makers you as decision makers, as well as DEET as decision makers, to be able to make those data-driven decisions. And then moving on to the next page, we've also proposed a phased implementation. We're already well into the year 2010. The first report is due now the end of the year. So for this first year, because we really had to have a starting point to go forward from, we're looking at providing the context for all of the programs, the input, so how many people did they serve, what were their resources, and then the output, what did they do, what did the program do. And that will be on data from January 1st through the end of June of this year. So of people or businesses or communities that we served in that six-month time period. And then one of the other questions that you asked about was, how does being in a program, and this would be the workforce development programs, how does that impact a person's experience on either unemployment insurance or the Minnesota Family Investment Program? And we don't know what that answer is. So what we're proposing to do for this first report is to compare, just kind of do a data match of all of the people that are in a program, compare them to, or look to see if they have experiences in UI, look to see if they have experiences in MFIP, and from that we'll determine thresholds of which programs even make sense to compare to UI or MFIP. Extended employment program probably doesn't have a huge occurrence of people on UI. The dislocated worker program does. So, you know, some programs will make sense to do comparisons and some won't.
Unfortunately, we have a session that starts at noon.
Okay.
Would you be offended if I asked you to hold up there and come back in a couple of weeks? I hear there's a workforce report coming out tomorrow that might have some accountability issues in it. So and you could probably expand a whole lot more at that particular time.
That's fine with me.
I apologize. The all of them scientists and business people were getting a little wordy. But before I go, if I could ask Commissioner McElroy, and thank you for coming, if you could, you know, just near and dear to my heart is the Office of Science and Technology. I saw it in the budget documents yesterday, a 3% reduction. I think it's on page 48. I think it's there. Any implications for that? Those particular, as this is a science and technology committee, about the only office that really deals with science and technology. I think there's a couple $100,000 left in that office. Is that going to be gone?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Dan McElroy, Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. And no, Mr. Chair, it's not. It will have a percentage reduction. I don't have the number in front of me. This is the staff is Betsy Luffs, who is just one of the best in the country at what she does. We've had a great return on investment. We think Minnesota companies got between $20 and $30 million in SBIR and STTR funding in 2009. It is not going to be gone. There will be a percentage reduction, and as soon as I have it, we'll provide you with that number. We are as big a believers in that program as you are, Mr. Chair, and we thank you for your support.
Representative Hilty, did you have a quick question on this?
Yes, I did. I'm glad to see Commissioner McElroy at the table finally. I was hoping he would be there earlier. Commissioner, the group which apparently you were the chairman of had some suggestions today that I think basically amounted to reduce revenue in a couple of different ways by cutting business taxes and by making a tax expenditure for angel investors, and at the same time give us some money. Does the administration support the conclusions so far of this group, and if so, are you going to have a proposal for funding this organization?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, the three tax proposals advanced that you heard described are in the governor's budget, the angel credit, the R&D credit, and the CAPCO or insurance credit. Their costs come principally in 12, 13, and beyond, and they're accounted for in the governor's budget. We did not account for the planning money that they're looking for in the governor's budget. Would do our best to provide staff support to that effort within DEED and to look perhaps for other resources. But the three tax provisions are accounted for, and they're not new. They have been in various proposals from this administration and also things that Representative Pawlenty supported and authored going back to the late 1990s.
Well, Commissioner, I noticed that some of the proposal was in the governor's budget, but interestingly, those are all things that are deferred into the next biennium, whereas the thing that I believe I heard Mr. Mellon calling for in this biennium is not in the budget.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, the angel credit has some costs in this biennium. The others, by the nature of the credit, do not. They do have credit or costs in the fiscal year 12 and 13, which we also provide for in the governor's budget, and they're shown there. The $500,000 for planning is not in the governor's budget. We certainly don't oppose it, but as a commissioner, I don't advocate for things that aren't in the governor's budget.
Mr. Hill, if I might interrupt and get kind of to the point there. Commissioner, did you formally request the $500,000 be put into the governor's budget?
Mr. Chairman, we provided a copy of the report as early as it was available. We discussed it with the management budget in the governor's office. The time for us to make our request was long past by the time this report was created. So as part of the formal budget process, we did not. And we understand how difficult this budget year is. One other comment, if I could, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty asked, why wasn't I at the table with the committee? And the request from your office was that you hear from the industry representatives rather than from our agency, and that was I would have been happy to participate, but I think the way it was done was very effective, and you got a chance to ask questions of people that you don't see very often.
Yeah, we get you in here regularly, and I'm sure as this budget process progresses, you'll be up at this building often.
Whenever I'm needed, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. I'm going to adjourn the committee, and I guess we'll all head down that tunnel. Yep.